are now intensely following the news, the brutality continues. And one of the great ironies of these protests has, in fact, been the use of excessive police force, making the point the protesters are trying to make themselves. And the police seem to lack all sense of irony here, or perspective, as the last thing you'd want to do to prove the point of the protesters is to confirm everything they're saying about you. But this is the authoritarian mentality, and we know that it's a mentality that goes all the way to the White House. So, of course, as his rhetoric escalates, their brutality will only continue apace. And even in the confrontation in Albuquerque around the statue of Oñate, the police ultimately arrested the man who did the shooting of the protester, but at the same time, not without using their tear gas and their pepper spray on the protesters.
And to add to that, and this is an important detail, the police let that happen. They were not around until it was time to shoot the tear gas and do all the other stuff. They knew their friends who are part of those militias told them when they could come. Yeah, this is problematic
you
between the police.
KBOO Portland.
Welcome to The Food Show. I'm Emily Becker. On today's show, we'll hear interviews with the owners of two longstanding Portland Black-owned businesses, Dub Travis of Dub St. John's and Theotis Kaysen of Kaysen's Fine Meats. Check out our Food Show Instagram account, @PDXFoodShow, to learn more about Black-owned food businesses in Portland. In the second half of the show, we'll hear an interview from Margin Podcast with host Jake Baez and Theotis Kaysen. First up, we have Chris Siegel's August 2017 interview with Chef Dub Travis, owner of Dub St. John's. Dub talks about his experience running a restaurant and ways we can support other Black-owned restaurants around Portland. This year, Support Black-Owned Restaurants Week is August 24th to 30th. I wanted to replay this interview now because we should be supporting Black-owned businesses every week. Dub is a resilient business owner and has moved his restaurant again since this interview was recorded. Dub St. John's is now located in Marie's in St. John's at 8727 North Lombard Street. Dub's is currently open during dinner hours for curbside pickup.
I took my digital recorder out into the community and talked with three business owners. I wanted to hear from some other voices about Support Black-owned Restaurants and what it means for us here in Portland.
I'm Patricia Trice, and I am the owner of Nana's Ice Cream Scoop Shop. What I do here at the Scoop Shop is just scoop ice cream. Sell ice cream, scoop ice cream, and definitely talk to each and every person that comes up to the window. I love people, love talking.
Yeah, I'm Theotis Kaysen at Kaysen's Fine Meat. Been in the meat business all my life. Started from Fred Meyer's 6 years ago and came over and opened this up. And we're just striving, we're community-based, we're family-based business. We're here 7 days a week just trying to make it and trying to serve the community. So come on by and check us out.
My name is Kaysen Phillips, and I'm the owner of Jamaican Homestyle Cuisine, located at 441 North Killingsworth Street.
I do like the fact that this is a week for supporting Black-owned businesses. A lot of businesses, you don't even know that they exist until you have an event or a celebration like this. Sometimes even reading the newspaper when they're advertising, like, oh, I didn't know that was right here in my community. So it is important because you get to know there are other businesses out there besides yours.
Kaysen's Post Shines, we're a little small. We're small businesses and we don't have the finances behind us that the bigger business have. They throw away more stuff in the day than we make in a whole year. You know, and people can come away with that and understand you know, and watch us grow, and we can grow and try to create jobs. You know, that's our main purpose, and we've got families too. We want to take care of them and just spread the love around.
A lot of Black-owned businesses are pretty much struggling right now. We have a lot of responsibilities and a lot of debt to pay, and so we need customers to come in and help us to survive. It's hard to survive as a Black-owned business in America, to be honest, and you know, in order for us to be there for a while, we need as much people as we can get to come in and buy whatever we have to offer them.
Information. That's information. And it's good. It's good. I always tell my kids, if you want to be knowledgeable, read a lot. If you want to know what's in your community, you got to get out. And once you know that it's there, it gives you a reason, actually, to be out. It really does.
If it wasn't for the community, I wouldn't be here. And they're very accepting of who I am, the culture that we have to offer them. And a lot of them also have never experienced Jamaican culture. They love the fact that they can just walk inside this building and there goes the culture for them. They don't even have to, it's like vicariously living it.
Gives you a sense of pride, ownership, community, you know, coming together, unity. Just knowing that in your neighborhood there are businesses that you can go to, you can support.
I hope to see new faces as well as old faces keep coming in and support us, be a part of us. Come with your ideas, come with whatever you can to support, you know, let's find a way to make it work.
My dad, he was a gardener when he retired, and he made sure all his old friends that couldn't afford the high prices was able to eat. He raised his vegetables in the garden, and he gave them away for real cheap, you know, so people can survive. So, and that's what it's mostly about, people and who we are and where we came from. And we got to get back to that, knowing who we are and start loving and protecting one another like it used to be, because we all got to remember, we came in with nothing and we're going to leave out with nothing at the end of the day. So let's think about that.
That was Patricia Trice, owner of Nana's Ice Cream Scoop Shop, Theotis Kaysen, owner of Kaysen's Fine Meats, and Kaysan Phillips, owner of Jamaican Homestyle Cuisine. The music was provided by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm now joined in the studio by Dub Travis, owner and chef of Dub's St. John's, to talk more about Support Black-Owned Restaurants Week. Dub, thank you for joining me on the food show.
Absolutely, Chris. It's wonderful to be here.
How long have you owned and operated Dub's St. John's?
So we opened Dub's St. John's December 1st, 2013. We're currently about 3.5 years in, a little over. It's been a fantastic experience being out there in St. John's. The community is growing so fast, and we've been able to be a really big part of the community.
And when did you know that you first wanted to cook for people?
Oh, wow. So I grew up in a big family. I'm the oldest of 8, and my mom's the oldest of 9. My grandma's 1 of 11. And so I've been cooking pretty much my whole life. Cooking for people, I always, you know, we'd have gatherings at my house or wherever, and I'd end up doing a lot of cooking. Cooking's a way to connect with people. I always thought that I was going to end up owning a nightclub. You know, that was like my dream. I'm like, oh, I want to open a nightclub. And through my experience with doing club promotions and whatnot, I kind of just kind of, one night we needed food. I had to prepare some food, you know. And it kind of just grew from there, from when we started incorporating the food into our events. And then it went to catering. And then the next thing you know, we're into a restaurant. So I guess probably about 15 years ago is when I really started seriously considering being a restaurateur.
All right. So you, from a young age, were interested in cooking for people. And then 15 years ago, you got going.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm curious what that step was like, that transition from being someone who enjoys cooking to, okay, now I'm going to actually make a living from this.
Sure. It was quite a leap. There's a huge learning curve, because when you're cooking for your friends, you're not really thinking about costing, you know, and you're not thinking about portion control. You do consider the quality of your ingredients and everything, but once you start doing it as a business, there's just a ton of things to learn, you know, from health codes and, you know, and from an entrepreneurial standpoint, how do you get your business started? You know, what's that real process like, from going down to the Secretary of State and filing for your business license with the city of Portland? You're getting your employee identification number. There's all these back behind the scene things that you have to do just to get the set up. And then you have to have a commercial kitchen. You can't be doing catering out of your house, you know. So then there's that other aspect. How do you find a commercial kitchen? Where's the starting point for that? You know, do you lease your own space and build a kitchen out, or do you, you know, rent out someone else's kitchen to do your event? So there's all these different types of considerations that you have prior to ever putting a piece of food out of the door.
And so you were cooking, you were catering, but then you said in 2013 you opened your brick and mortar in St. John's. What were the challenges for getting that going?
Well, so prior to that, we had a restaurant. It was called Mac and Dubs, Excellent Chicken and Waffles. It was located on MLK. We opened, me and a friend of mine, J-Mac, local guy, opened up Mac and Dubs Breakfast Club, Mac and Dubs Excellent Chicken and Waffles on February 1st, 2012. Okay. The Breakfast Club just it wasn't a good fit for us where it was located. It was an ambitious project. So we focused on the chicken and waffle place. The day before Thanksgiving 2012, somebody broke into our place, burnt it down. It was a terrible experience. It was heart-wrenching to see something that you worked for, that you put your blood, sweat, and tears in, that you painted, that you cleaned, that you designed, that you did the drywall, that, you know, and a business that you built up to be totally scorched by fire, and then to have a derogatory epithet painted on one of the walls. That was pretty devastating.
So was it, I mean, you said a derogatory epithet, so it seemed like it was actually an attack on the fact that you were a Black-owned business?
Absolutely. So, it was determined that it was arson, that it was a possible hate crime, that and then on top of all that, we ended up not being able to renew the lease in that location. So basically, they effectively put us out of business. Well, Mac and I went into the studio and we produced an album to kind of like as therapy for ourselves. We produced an album called Potlandia at the time. And it was about, you know, the legalization of marijuana and everything. But so while we were doing that, we had an internship. We were playing every week out in St. John's at this place called Plew's Brews. And Randy Plew one day goes, "Hey, Dub, you should check out this kitchen. They don't have anything going on. And then, you know, while you're waiting to get another restaurant, you might as well try that out." So I went over there to the Ranger and looked at the kitchen. And it was empty, locked up. Bar was still going. And I inquired, and I ended up getting it. So December 1st, 2013, a year later, opened up Dub St. John's. I had talked to Mac about possibly doing a Mac and Dubs there, but he, you know, after the fire, was kind of hurt about it all and still it's a lot of work, and you know, Max mostly focused on doing more entertainment stuff. He was in a member of the U Crew, which was a big group from here a long time ago. So I just took it on myself. I said, I'm going to jump in both feet, and we opened the doors. It's been a fantastic run.
That's wonderful. I just can't imagine the resilience it takes to go from that experience of having your business burn down to then being able to say, you know, I'm ready to do this again.
Oh, well, you know, yeah, that's true. You have to have resilience. You have to have a bunch of personal drive and gumption to want to succeed. Some stick-to-itiveness, you know. I felt like Mac and Dubs was on the verge of being a huge success. We have got a lot of rave reviews, and I felt like, you know what, I can do this again. We're in a growing community, and I think that we can make an impact both with the food and socially.
You kind of went through this really powerful experience, mm-hmm. and you came out, and you're still working hard. Oh, and absolutely. It just shows that at this time in Portland, there is a more of a need than ever to have something like Support Black Owned Restaurant Week. So I guess I'll just start there. Why do you think Support Black Owned Restaurant Week is important?
Well, so this is the third year. And okay, I'm a black restaurant owner, but I had no idea that there were, at the time, there were like 85 different restaurants that were minority or black owned, you know. And saying black owned doesn't mean just African American. There's like Ethiopian and Jamaican and Sudanese and Nigerian and all these different kinds of restaurants and that are owned by his, you know, African American people and Africans and other cultures. So the importance of it is to get the awareness out. Because there's all these different chefs that are doing all this different amazing kind of food and stuff that you just need to add to your palate. Because food is wonderful. The tastes are okay. We all have the same ingredients to work with, basically, you know. And but it's what that particular chef or what that particular restaurant does with those ingredients to bring out the flavor of their homeland, of the flavor of their culture, of even their families, right? So you get to not just experience the restaurant, but you get to kind of delve into who that person is and where they come from through eating their food, or, you know, what we call breaking bread with one another, you know.
And I want to, you know, there's a number of these weeks, right, where mm-hmm. there's food awareness. You know, there's like pizza week and burger week. So tell me, how is this different?
It's not really. It's just, you know, like I guess last week was burger week. And so now you know where there's like tons of great burgers at. With Black Restaurant Week, now you know where there's like tons of great black chefs and black restaurants that serve a variety of different foods. So it's pretty much the same.
And it's just like we heard from Patricia Trice from Nana's Ice Cream Scoop Shop, mm-hmm. where she talks about how you can live in a place and just not know that right near you there's this amazing food. And
absolutely.
So this is a chance to kind of get the word out on that.
Sure. It's all about awareness, you know, because if you don't know, you don't know. But, you know, thanks to KBOO, your show, Chris, we're getting the word out. It's getting bigger every year. You know, this is the third year. There's 74 different restaurants that we're going to try to get the community to come out and support. And we're doing it a week this year because a weekend just isn't enough, you know, for maybe you don't get to go to all 74 restaurants. That'd be a lot of eating in a week. But, you know, maybe you can try two or three or four of them. And in one weekend, you know, kind of sometimes people's attention spans are short. So after the weekend's gone, you kind of don't remember. But this year, we're going to just pump it out more and more so that people can make sure they get out and know, you know, just have a better awareness of where these places are and who the people are.
I'm curious what, you know, what the hope is and what you hope for as far as like the economic impact this has for these Black-owned restaurants and the Black community in general in Portland.
Okay, so if nobody knows you're there, then no one's coming to your business means you're not making money, which means that you're not going to be in business very long. So that just having that awareness, driving people through the door. So the first year, we've been having an amazing turnout of people. So definitely helped us out financially. The first year, that Saturday was our biggest day of the entire year. It was amazing. And the second year was almost the same. So I'm hoping that with us being out here doing all of the media that we're doing, will help some of the businesses that haven't been seeing the customers come through their doors, that it generates more business for them. Because, you know, ultimately, we want the businesses to survive so that they can make impacts on the community by hiring people from the community, you know, just making it more sustainable part of the community.
So in almost any conversation nowadays, it's hard to avoid the sort of current political and social climate.
Sure.
And I know a lot of white people who are looking to be active and participate in dismantling racism and showing up for everyone in their community. So How is Support Black-Owned Restaurants an opportunity for the folks in that community to get involved?
Okay. It's hard to kind of like separate the two. Okay, so I'm like a Black restaurateur, but I wouldn't say that my restaurant is a Black restaurant. You know what I mean? It's a restaurant that's for everyone. I just happen to be a Black guy who owns it. And I do a traditionally African-American cuisine that's there. So for everybody to come out and support that is like you're helping your neighbor succeed in their business. So sometimes online when this thing happens, and every year it happens, we get trolls. And there's people that go, well, Black-owned restaurant, why does it have to be Black-owned restaurant week? Because that's perpetuating racism. Well, it's not really perpetuating racism, because I say, well, there's Cinco de Mayo, there is St. Patty's Day, which is celebrating Irish culture, there is the Chinese New Year, which is celebrating Chinese New Year, there's restaurants with clearly printed on the sign Italian food, Greek food, Asian food, Chinese restaurant. But we tend to get a lot of backlash from people when you say Black anything. So I, you know, don't even want to call it Black food, because it's like, well, the food's not colored Black. You know, it should be African American cuisine. You know, it is. Why do we have to call it soul food? You know, that's a great, great title, great moniker, but let it be what it is. You know, it's what we've taken the same ingredients, done it our way, and that's what we call it. And it's not to discount, diminish, or any other culture or person's way of preparing these ingredients. So I think if people just come out and support your local African-American entrepreneur, business person, or whatever, you're just helping the community out a little bit more. And it's just helping your neighbor, your partner. You know, it doesn't really have to be about race, you know, even though in this climate that we're in right now, where so many people in our country are trying to be separate I guess if you come in out and supporting Black Restaurant Week, you're being a little more inclusive. You know, I saw a post where somebody posted about Black Restaurant Week, and one of the comments on there was that, well, I'm not going to go support that week because it's Black Restaurant Week. And I'm like, that's the reason for you to go support, you know, to show that solidarity with your brother, with your humankind, you know. So
exactly. Well, we're about out of time, Dub. I really appreciate
that
you
fast
coming on.
Really, Chris?
it is that fast. But before you go, I want you to help folks know how they can get involved and support Black Owned Restaurants Week.
So what you can do is you can go to iloveblackfood.com. That's iloveblackfood.com. You can see a listing of all of the restaurants. There's an area for you to leave comments and suggestions. You can go to dubstjohns.com, of course, and you can hit us up.
Great. Dub, thank you so much for coming on and talking with me.
Thank you, Chris. It was wonderful being here. I love cable.
Next up, we'll hear an interview from Margin Podcast with host Jake Baez. Jake is the Portland-born son of Mexican parents who instilled in him a love for art, culture, justice, community, and curiosity. Jake recently launched Margin Podcast to uplift and amplify the voices of our marginalized communities in Portland and the surrounding areas. In this episode, Jake interviews Theotis Kaysen, who has been cutting meat in Portland for 40 years and is about to celebrate his first year anniversary in his new location at Alberta Commons in Northeast. Jake and Theotis talk about meat, gentrification, and life in Portland.
On our first post on Instagram, I called out that Portland has been called the whitest city in the country. By most recent counts, Portland proper is roughly 72% white, 9% Latin, 7% Asian, and 6% black. It's a cold fact that sits poorly in the hearts and the minds of so many. This city has a reputation of progressivism, but it has deeply problematic roots. Racism has been entrenched in Oregon, arguably more so than any other northern state. In 1859, as Oregon joined the Union, it strictly forbade the settlement of black people, a practice that was upheld by no other state until or since. Black and Latino residents have faced up to 64% higher financial burdens on rent due to high deposits and fees, and black students are expelled at rates more than four times higher than their white classmates. This goes hand in hand with disadvantaged positions in employment and education in minority communities. In 2009, the median white income was roughly $70,000, and blacks averaged just $34,000. All of these and many other factors have contributed to a systematic suppression of minority prosperity in Portland, and the black community feeling the heaviest impact of Portland's glacial dismantling of overtly racist policy. You often hear the term gentrification thrown around, but in casual conversation, people seem to grasp the overall concept, but don't have a solid understanding of how it happened here. After World War II, Portland attracted a large black workforce that settled in a temporary housing development called Vanport, which tragically flooded, displacing over 18,000 residents, a third of which were black. After the flood, black Portlanders grew a community in the Albina neighborhood. But these days, North Williams Avenue hosts upscale condos nestled among hipster bars and juice shops. The city has seen numerous gently coded urban renewal projects that forced out small black communities, such as the one that was displaced to make way for the construction of Legacy Emmanuel Hospital. The recent social climate belies a history of white dominance, as Oregon was formerly a comfortable home for the KKK. While Portland is politically progressive, our government has entrenched the dominance of white culture, housing, and business. The issues of black displacement were deepened due to the countrywide process of redlining in the 70s and 80s, which targeted minorities in discriminatory mortgage lending practices, limiting their access to home loans. Predatory lenders and financial forces fostered a concerted effort to force the black community out of areas like Albina, leaving the abandoned and disheveled properties to plummet in value. In the late 80s and early 90s, white businesses, investors, and contractors ate up the opportunity and began to invest in Albina. Perhaps the greatest flaw in what I'll sarcastically call the Portlandia effect is that since this recent bastion of neoliberalism has become a proverbial flame that draws the mostly white transplant moths of UX coders, artists, and hobby cyclists from other parts of the country, they're woefully uneducated about the systematic suppression of black and brown culture that has built this carefree lifestyle that they cherish. This is not my quote, but I've heard it said so many times. Black Lives Matter signs have replaced the black people in these neighborhoods. If you're still listening, good. Keep listening. Not just to me, but to the voices of our community. That is what it takes. You've just gotten a breakneck pace, Cliff Notes version of roughly 150 years worth of It's probably in your best interest to fact check my rant and understand our city's roots a bit more for yourselves. The city has started to recognize its problematic past. Back in 2014, there were plans to bring a new Trader Joe's to the Albina neighborhood with a deeply discounted hand up from the Portland Development Commission, thanks to concerns voiced to the city by the Portland African American Leadership Forum. The city was faced with the sobering reality that continuing to propagate expansion of this kind profited from the displacement of African Americans in the city. Since then, Prosper Portland has engaged in an effort to reclaim spaces for black-owned businesses in gentrifying neighborhoods. I had the chance and the honor to speak with one of the business owners who owns a butcher shop in Alberta Commons. Theotis Kaysen is a journeyman meat cutter and butcher with over 40 years of experience, and it's clear that his perspective and attitude are one of the reasons that this city is great.
Go ahead when you're ready.
Okay, thank you. How's business over at Kaysen's?
Well, right now, as today, it was an excellent day. I mean, the weather's good. We have a great product. And since this COVID-19 hit, I think that was one of the best things that could happen to our business.
Oh, really? How's that?
Well, some of the other shops are closed that you can't go into. You can order online, and there's just curbside service. So we're allowing up to three people at a time in there, and they can see the product. It's a lot of, I've got a repeat customers, but I got a lot of first time customers.
Ah, I see.
And everything's fresh and everything's natural, and it's just great exposure.
That's fantastic. I know that you've been around in Portland for quite some time. Is your family from the area?
Born and raised here. I'm a native son of Portland, Oregon.
How long has your family been in the Portland area?
Well, my mom and dad, they're both gone, so I'm going to say 64 years plus, 65 years plus.
Where did your family come from before they settled in Portland?
Well, my dad is from Arkansas, and my mom is from Mississippi.
Wow. And do you have a lot of family out those ways?
Oh, I got a ton of family here.
Oh, yeah?
We have probably, with all relatives and nieces and nephews and cousins, we probably have 200 people.
Goodness, that's a big family.
Yeah, we got a big family.
I actually was recently speaking to a former coworker of mine who says that he's your cousin. I spoke to him. I told him that I was going to give you a call and have an interview with you, and he said, "Oh yeah, that's my cousin."
Oh great! I mean, it's a ton of us, man. I've got a lot of relatives around here. You know, we've come from so many places too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Mr. Kaysen, how did you get yourself into the meat business?
Well, when I was 8 years old, I used to shop at your mom and pop store, Neighborhood Bill's shopping center. He was on North Williams Avenue, and I went up there one day, and the gumball machine had broke, so the son offered me a job to clean that up, and they had a meat market in the back, and later on down the line they started making sausage. So I used to work there in between there and the barbershop next door, and so I got my entrepreneurship in that way. So I had a shoe shine stand in the barbershop, and then we had a place to wash cars out there. So I was a young man just trying to figure out how to make a buck, stay out of trouble, you know?
Yes, of course.
And so there was another young guy named Eugene Mitchell at the time. He was their head meat cutter, and I told him, hey, I wanted to learn how to do that. So between Eugene Mitchell and the son, they gave me an opportunity. And so I took it and learned all I can there. And then I think in 1974, I went to work as apprentice for Safeway. It's where the new season is on the Portland Boulevard there. I worked with them guys for about 5 years. And then I took over the store, the little mom pop store, when mom died. And then I took over the market, and also I was working for Safeway. Like I said, I'd cut meat at the store over there, and then my wife would come down and she would make all the sales. I'd have all the sausage made and the hamburger, and had the pork chops and steaks cut. And then I would go work for Safeway, do my 8 hours over there, and come back in the evening time and set up shop before I'd go in the next day, you know.
Well, that sounds like a really honest living.
But yeah, you know, I mean, hey, you know, you're young and you got a lot of energy and you wanna do something with your life. And, you know, I come from a big family, like I said, so I was number 9 of 10 kids.
Oh, wow.
And, hey, they didn't have a lot of money. And, hey, they worked hard. And, I mean, I got to thinking, wow, they got to buy 10 pairs of shoes at a time, and they got to feed all of us at a time. So, hey, I was trying to put my support in there. I've done all I could, you know.
Yeah, certainly. Well, it seems like your business is really thriving. How have you been able to escape gentrification? Because I know that that's been hitting a lot of old Portland businesses hard. How have you been able to maintain?
Well, I cater to everybody, you know what I mean? I don't just look at it as it's black owned, but it's a business.
Mm-hmm.
And in business, I mean, Fred Meyer's and Safeway, they cater to everybody. And I've learned that throughout the years by working with Safeway, and I had a great opportunity of being able to work at all of the Fred Meyer stores in Portland and in Washington. And I think I worked maybe 3 or 4 Safeway stores when I was working. And, you know, I mean, that's what you have to do. And I built a good relationship and try to serve them to the best of my ability, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people respect you for when you give them an honest opinion. And if it's not right, hey, I won't sell it to them. I like to sleep at night and knowing I've done the right thing for my neighbors in my community. And I work like with a lot of meat cutters, and some of them lived in Sandy, Oregon, Beaverton, and Gresham, and Hillsboro, and, you know, they didn't want to work at their local store because they didn't want to be bothered with their neighbors. But hey, I just like to take care of people. And, you know, if you take care of your neighbors and your unneighbors, hey, they'll take care of you. And so I got all different races in my family. One of my brothers who's deceased now, he was married to a Caucasian lady. And so I got nieces and nephews, and hey, we all get along. And we've got grandkids, and hey, I mean, God made one race, and we're the human race, so we got to learn how to be civilized with one another.
Yes, sir.
I mean, when the white people moved in, and they keep their property up, and, you know, and I bought a house, and, you know, I try to keep my property up so the value's up. And that's all you want. You want to be able to live next door to whoever, or on top or on the bottom of whoever, and you want to maintain good relationships with people. You know, I love people. You know, I mean, I'm a people's person. I know everybody don't love me, but hey, you know, we go on. We got a short life here sometimes in this world, and you know, we just want to get the most and the best out of it while we can. You know, we didn't bring nothing in here, and we're not going to take nothing out. You know, and it's everything is not about money. Sometimes, you know, because there's a lot of people that I've helped along the way through all the markets I've had in town. You know what I mean? And I gave away a lot because I don't want to see nobody's kids hungry, you know, and I don't want to be hungry. My dad taught us as a little boy, when one of us eat, we all eat. And he was a son of a sharecropper. His dad raised hogs in in Arkansas. And he fed people. So, you know, we've got to take care of one another, you know.
Yes. Yeah, that's a fantastic attitude to have, and I completely agree with you.
I mean, that's the way of life. I mean, you know, a lot of people go rich. You know, I'm not trying to be rich. I'm just, you know, I just want to take what God gives me and make it work. And, you know, I try to teach my friends and my nieces and nephews, my grandkids, how to do the right thing. You know, I mean, some of us get it and some of us don't get it. You know what I mean? And everybody's got to be accountable. And, you know, everybody live their own life, you know, because we got a life to live. But, you know, we want to do the best we can while we're here. And that's the thing I've learned. And one or two good mentors and coaches and stuff. And they took us to track and to football, to basketball, and kept us out of trouble, you know. And I took all them experiences and put them together. And, you know, and a lot of us, we had big families back in the day. You know, there were 6, 7, 8 kids in the family, you know, because, hey, when mom and dad was growing up, they didn't have no TV to watch. So, hey, they made babies.
Sounds like a fine pastime to me.
So, hey, that was a good thing for them, hey.
Yeah. Mr. Kaysen, it occurs to me that you have a big impact on the community. You know, you said there are some people who don't like you. I can't imagine who that would be, because you have a very bright personality and kind and loving heart.
Well, and I say that because it's probably not like, but jealous, because, you know, some have a jealous spirit. But, you know, I'm not a basketball player making a whole lot of money like some of these super athletes. Hey, I'm just trying to feed families and take the gifts of life that God has given me and make them work. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, I mean, I'm in a great place right now on the corner of Alberta and MLA, other small markets around town. And like I say, I've paid my dues. And, you know, this is where God has put me at this time in my life. I mean, hey, when they asked me to come and take that opportunity, I was about ready to sit down, because I'd come out of Kenton, and the building over there, it was old, and the landlord, he didn't want to put any money in there. And I can understand, you know, that's his building and he didn't want to fix it up. But, you know, there was one more opportunity. There was still a little wind in the sail, so I had to take the wind and run with it. And just not only for me, but for the community. I'm just another option. You know, there's Season, there's Fred Meyer's, there's Safeway. But I sell a natural meat product. The beef comes out of Colorado, and it's a great product. You know, I dealt with Oregon Natural Meats out of Eugene, Oregon, when they were around. Family owned and operated, Stephen Neal. I mean, one of the greatest guys that you could ever meet. He was he's a rancher. His sons, and it was a family business. His sons didn't want to take over, so she didn't want to keep it going. And so...
That's a shame.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, he raised them to where they needed to be. And I can understand, it's hard work. It's hard work. And, you know, it's nothing wrong with when you want to do something different, you know what I mean? And, you know, I mean, you can't twist anybody's arm, but hey, there's opportunity was there, but you sacrifice so much. And that's the thing. The kids probably seen their dad sacrifice the weekends and Saturdays and Sundays of feeding the animals and doing what they had to do on the ranch and repairs. And, you know, I kind of get it. You know, it's just like, hey, I'm there early in the morning. I'm there late at night sometimes. And I was going 7 days a week. And then I had to slow my roll down to 5 days a week. So, you know, because I'm not a spring chicken anymore. But like I said, the pandemic hit, now the other place is closed. And that gave me new life. A lot of more people are seeing what I have now, and I'm passionate about what I do.
Yeah.
And that makes a big difference because, hey, I mean, I was professional at Safeway, I was professional at Fred Meyer's, and I'm still a professional, you know what I mean? I want the best for myself and the best for my family, the best for my customers, you know, like I say, because, hey, I'm only going to be here for a little while, and I just want to leave a good impression, you know what I mean? And I want to do good.
Well, sir, you've made a really good impression on me. And, you know, you say that you're just another option. You know, Fred Meyer's an option, Safeway's an option, and you're another option. But it seems to me that you have something special that they don't necessarily have. What would you say sets your shop apart from those other types of businesses? How do you engage with the community, or what kind of things do you do special with your product that they don't do?
Well, you know, I mean, it comes from the heart. I'm an owner, so I take pride. You know, you gotta take pride in what you do. It's been a dying business, so you know, I take pride in what I do and what I've learned, and I don't want to see all the good trades, all the good talents that I've learned, different cuts, different styles from other people, go to waste. You know what I mean? And I've learned about the marinated stuff, because people have different allergies and stuff, and just offering a good piece of meat. You know what I mean? I mean, a good piece of meat is natural. It's no hormones, no antibiotics, no chemicals. And that's the way everybody should experience that. But, you know, everybody can't afford the higher end stuff. And it should be affordable to everybody. And then it's taking pride in what you do and who you are. And you can do it right the first time and get it right, or you can do some makeovers, some do-overs. But, you know, in life, you don't get a do-over time. We only got one chance to say, hey, I've ran the course, I've done it right, and it's a done deal when it's over, you know. When I go sit down, I got 4 years left over there at Cason's. You know, this will be my first one-year anniversary coming up on 22nd, and God gives me strength. And I'm still around here. If he sees me fit to be here, I want to give it all the best I've got, and make the community proud and say, hey, the man took pride in what he done. He didn't service no junk, and that's what I'm about. You know what I mean? And I just want to give you the best experience that I can in life. And we got to do the best we can with each other in this life that God give us, and that's the thing. I mean, I had a prayerful mother, and she was a prayer warrior. She was a God fearing woman, and she taught us the right way. You know, we had our dad there, but hey, I mean, Mom ran the household. You know,
yeah.
She made sure that, hey, we've done our chores, and Dad made sure, hey, when the boys came along, he'd get up and go to work in the morning, get the car out the garage, warm it up so he can do his thing, and we've came down the line and we've all had a chance to do that. So my family been blessed. I mean, we've had an electrician, we had a plumber, had a carpenter in the bunch, a draftsman, a upholsteress, you know, and beauticians on my sister's part, and you could say daycare workers, you know. And so, I mean, they taught us the right way to be on the right path, and I look back at all of that. And, you know, and then when I step out in the morning, and, hey, I'm not only representing me, I'm representing the ones that came before me and the ones that's coming after me. And that's the only thing I'm trying to do is a big picture. So, and be happy and do the right thing, you know what I mean? Because, like I say, hey, one day I want to go be able to sit and fish again. I used to fish as a young. You know, the old soldiers brought me up, and then just enjoy life, you know. Get in the wind and let the wind blow and breeze and catch a fish and just, hey, be happy.
Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned that you're kind of building this business and this legacy for your family. What are the next steps? You're going to head towards retirement at some point, I imagine. What happens after that for Kaysen's?
Well, I got some young men. I believe in young men, and even if they don't come from my family, it still can be Kaysen. I'm teaching a skill, a trade. One young man that's working with me now, his parents used to shop over at Denver Avenue when I was on Denver, and he was 6 years old at the time. He's got like six siblings, and I asked, which one of you guys want to come work for me? And I do. He's 17 years old, and he's got a friend, classmate. He's, I think, Eva Doplet from another country. He wants to come work for me. And it's things like that where, hey, even if the family want to take over, hey, we're all family because we are one in this world. And it's still, I teach you what I know. I don't take it to the grave. And it's reusable because people are still going to need to eat. And, you know, I can show you how to break this carcass down, or I can show you how to break this quarter down and get the most out of it. And if you're willing to learn something and you don't mind putting the time in, and you can take it to the next level. Hey, you can, learn how to operate a Fred Meyer's or Safeway because you have knowledge. I'm going to teach you the knowledge that I have and the skills. It's just like, hey, my brother, he's a carpenter, and he taught his grandkids. If they want to take that and run with it, so be it. If not, you know, there's somebody else can learn the trade. But, you know, we've got to look out for one another.
Well, that's fantastic, sir. I got to tell you, I really appreciate hearing your positive attitude and, you know, these messages of community and togetherness, you know, amidst all of this darkness that we're facing in the world. It really makes me quite hopeful and happy that you've been able to have so much success.
Well, you know, and one other thing, I had hope because when I was coming up and back in the days and seeing the water holes and the dogs being put on the people in Alabama, you know, with all the racism and stuff going. I mean, hey, we're better than that. We are all better than that. And we've got to, I mean, we can't forget about it. We got to remember, but we got to say, hey, look, let's embrace, let's do better. And even with the police communications, like police, in my day when they used to ride the neighborhood, we had Officer Newman, Officer Red, Officer Nelson. Them guys, they knew us. I mean, hey, they used to bring the motorcycles around. We'd ride on the motorcycles, their personal motorcycles. We used to play ball with them over in the parking lot of Mount Olive Church on Northeast Skyler back in the day. Hey, they get a call and they run and do their call and they come back and they put their guns in the trunk and hey, we run them up and down the court. Hey, they knew who we were. We knew who they were. And it wasn't no intimidation. We wasn't scared. You know what I mean? And some of them lived in the neighborhood back then, I understood, you know. And now they're retired and they're gone on, you know, and it's a different wavelength than come in now, changing of the guard. And hey, and some of that stuff that we have these problems because there's changing of guards and we don't embrace one another. We don't get to know who we are, you know. And you know what I mean? And that's a bad thing. I mean, hey, I've lived in the neighborhood here where I'm at for 20 years, and some of my new neighbors, I don't know them. I've been here. I'm one of the longest living residential over here, and I'm here, and I'm gonna be here until I'm gone, until the good Lord take me away. And I just want to get along with everybody, do all I can for each other, for one, and be happy. Because hey, it's not my world, it's our world. And I'm not the architect of this. God is. So I'm just trying to be one nation under God and do what he wants me to do and do what's right, you know.
Yes, sir. I really appreciate your perspective. I truly hope that that you're still around for quite some time, because the world definitely could use some more of your type of perspective.
Hey, I thank you so much. And if you ever over this way, stop in and see me.
Yes, sir. I think I'll be there. I think I'll be there Friday afternoon or Friday late morning. I'll stop by and maybe buy some pork chops or some sausage from you.
Okay. All right. We'll have some.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you talking to me.
Okay, I appreciate you. And thank you so much.
Of course. Have a wonderful night.
All right, you too.
Thanks for listening and joining me in helping the voices in our marginalized communities in Portland be heard. Please remember to support the good people that are opening themselves up in this show by putting your money where your mouth is. You can find Kaysen's Fine Meats at 5015 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard and online at kaysensfinemeats.com. Watch the show's feed at Margin Podcast on Instagram, and you'll be sure to catch more delicious food and engaging stories from the good people of Portland and the surrounding areas. Find us where you find podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, etc. And if you know of someone from a marginalized community that wants to tell their story, tell them to add us on IG, or have them send us an email to margin.podcast@gmail.com.
That's it for this episode of The Food Show. If you have any comments about the show or ideas for future shows, please email us at foodshow@kboo.fm. If you missed anything today or want to find links and resources, you can find the episode at kboo.fm or on the iTunes or Google Play app. Our next episode will be on July 15th at 11 a.m. Until then, I'm Emily Becker. Thanks for listening. Sweetest of love, I found out, came upon me when I was so sick. Sweetest of love, guiding us through, came upon me when I was so sick.
Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Esta es una sección especial en español en respuesta